Argument, United States versus Anglin, Mr. Gutierrez.
May it please the court, Your Honor Gutierrez, on behalf of Lee Anglin, counsel. Judge. I'm here arguing on behalf of Mr. Lee Anglin that his loss calculation was improper, that the number of victims was improper, and that his speedy trial rights were violated when he approximately for 4.5 months was unrepresented due to an investigation that had occurred with his actions and with the actions of his attorney, that wasn't brought to light to the court for 4.5 months. And during that period of time, essentially Mr. Anglin had to fend for himself, and whether he fended for himself appropriately, whether he fended for himself smartly, whether he did the right thing, that is of lesser import than the fact that he had counsel that was representing him, and that at the same time, during that same period of time, time was being excluded while he had an adversarial or conflicting role with his client. So,
now, Mr. Anglin was, to put it mildly, a difficult client from this record. It seems to me that looking at the district court's exclusions in the speedy trial matter, they're all pretty rational. There are discussions going on. There are motions being filed. There are other things. Sometimes he's got counsel. Sometimes he doesn't. I appreciate you came in when you did after a number of predecessors, and I'm sure you have done the best you can. But it's, I don't see overall where there's any problem with this.
Well, it seems to me that the issue is one not so much of whether Mr. Anglin devised his own machinations. Because it seems to me that if a person who is troubled, a person who has a different view of the world, say, than the rest of us, begins to fashion for himself an idea of how he should be represented, well, then that's one thing. But to have counsel that at that time wasn't standby counsel, and I don't know where Mr. Anglin got the idea that, well, if nobody's going to represent me my way, then I might as well just have a potted plant standing next to me because I'm going to represent myself. So I think that certainly for those 4.5 months when it was crucial that Mr. Anglin, through counsel, develop a relationship with the government, if that's the course that he wanted to take, or whether he said, listen, I'm not going to go along with the government, I'm going to fight this case, I'm going to stand on my rights and fight, will you fight for me? Well, in this case, during those 4.5 months, Mr. Anglin was also fighting with and at odds with his own counsel. And that wasn't brought to light for 4.5 months, when finally it got to the point where the government said, well, now we're going to have to bring this to the attention of the court, which, to the government's credit, they brought it to the attention of the court. But by this time, Mr. Anglin had, in essence, alienated himself from his own due process rights. So if I'm going to stand here and say,
that can hardly be laid at the feet of the district court judge in the form of a Speedy Trial Act violation, is the material point.
That is a material point. But how does one know if they're going to choose to go to trial intelligently and therefore make it an issue, or simply fend for themselves during the time they're supposed to be represented? Now, it's one thing to say, okay, I disagree with my attorney, I'm going to move forward. But during this period of time, Mr. Anglin didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether to say, okay, I want to retain this client, I want to hold on to him, or I'm going to disregard what he's doing for me and I'm going to go to trial or not go to trial. This is the point I'm making. If you're represented by an attorney that's competent and is zealously representing you and is faithfully representing you, then you can't have it both ways. You can't say, okay, I'm going to make an intelligent choice to go to trial, or I'm going to make an intelligent choice to cooperate, if the person that's going to help you reach that choice, such as going to trial, has an adverse position to your benefit. So I'm not here to second-guess Mr. Anglin on what he did or what he didn't do. I'm only saying, and I'm suggesting to the court, and I see my time is up because this was short, I'm just suggesting to the court that Mr. Anglin, during the most critical point of his life, during the critical time of his idea of what the law is or what shouldn't be, he had counsel that couldn't represent him for 4.5 months. And I submit that every time that somebody stood up for him or that he stood up for himself and said, okay, I agree to continue this case, I still need to be talking to somebody else. In this case, I still need to be talking to the government. I still need to be trying to help myself. He didn't have an attorney during that period. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. Mr. Collins?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan Collins. I represent the United States. I'd like to pick up on the fact that the record does not support a number of the allegations the defendant has made. In particular, the allegation was just made that he was fighting with his own counsel. There's nothing in the record to support that. There's also nothing in the record to support that any prejudice resulted to this defendant in that 4.5 months that he's talking about. The record supports that on June 8th, his counsel was interviewed by the government and then learned that he was under investigation himself. At the next status hearing before the court was advised of the potential conflict of interest, and Mr. Anglin at that point told the court that he wanted to keep that very same lawyer. There was no allegation whatsoever of any prejudice at that time, and there was no evidence later offered to support any allegation of prejudice when the motion to dismiss was made. Unless there's any other questions, the government would stand on its brief.
Mr. Gutierrez, in his reply brief, lists a number. He doesn't, there are no record references, but he lists a number of payments which he says were legitimate payments to, well, or at least they were payments to investors, and that you didn't subtract them.
And the record is simply does not support that allegation. The record repeatedly shows that the government deducted each and every payment that was made to Mr. Anglin to each of those investors identified.
So the particular people he names as receiving those payments, are they people who did receive the payments and you did subtract them, or they didn't receive the payments so they weren't subtracted?
There's a combination, Judge. For the most part, in fact, more than except a couple, they received payments. Those were deducted from the loss amount. And there was a record made of that. The citations to those particular deductions are in the government's response brief, and I'm happy to provide them now as well. Also, Judge, within the reply brief, picking up on that, there was also some quotations made from the testimony. I would submit that a fuller reading of the transcript shows those quotations contain a number of errors and do not accurately reflect what the testimony was. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, the government would stand on its briefs and ask the court to affirm the conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And the court will stand in recess until 2 o'clock.